Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real.
Yes, big thanks to Laura Fox for teeing us up nicely for the weekend. I'm Shane Dawson. It's Friday, the 4th of February, and this is Game On. Coming up this evening, Ireland expects. It's the eve of our Six Nations opener against the Welsh side, who are just as excited as we are.
Yeah, from our perspective, it is exciting. We go into Dublin, you know, a team we respect. Yeah, they've got wonderful coaching staff as well. And, you know, how good is this? First game of the Six Nations. You know, we're excited. We're looking forward to the challenge. We're playing a team we respect. A very, very good side. But first game of the Six Nations, it's class.
Yeah, certainly is. Cannot wait for the rugby, but also cannot wait for the hurling. I'll be joined by Shane McGrath and Ryan O'Dwyer to preview the Allianz Hurling Leagues that throw in this weekend.
You've guys running around the field chasing a ball the size of your fist, and anything can happen.
When you go out onto the hurling pitch, you just feel like a warrior.
Above all else, it's a game of skill.
It's very difficult to explain. How can you explain feelings? And that feel from the hurling, it runs up along the handle, into your hand, and really into your soul.
Yeah, there is something spiritual about hurling. Plus, we've Jane Mangan to set us up for the Dublin Racing Festival. And if that wasn't enough, Alan Colley and Fergal Brennan will be on to talk association football as Stephen Kenny loses a key member of his backroom team. And the winter break finally ends across the water with a bumper weekend of FA Cup action on the cards. As always, if you do want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Yes, hello there. You are very welcome to Game On as we look forward to a mammoth weekend of sport. It is great to have your company wherever you are tuning in from. And I'm delighted to say I have real humans in studio post-COVID. It's absolutely brilliant to be joined live by Alan Colley and by Ryan O'Dwyer. Alan Colley, of course, a former professional footballer, and Ryan O'Dwyer, a former Tip and Dublin intercounty hurler. Gentlemen, you're very welcome. It's great to have your company. We were just chatting off-air there about, you know, and I mentioned there, mammoth weekend of sport. So before we get into the head news lines and all the real kind of chunky talk, Ryan, looking forward to the sport. I believe you're off to the rugby.
Yeah, heading off to the rugby tomorrow. So it's going to be a good day. It's actually a busy day now tomorrow. I have my first session back with my young lads team. So we're doing a bit of hurling and football in the morning and then straight away into the Viva with my wife. So busy day ahead.
Proper day of sport. Alan, I'm going to suspect we might see you at the horse racing.
I'd say there's a good chance, yeah. Evening Shane, evening Ryan. It's a huge weekend, obviously, with sport. I was only thinking about it today. And we generally say most weekends are big weekends, Shane, but this, as you say, is a bit of a whopper. Obviously, the Six Nations starting and the brilliant Dublin Racing Festival, as you says, which has been a fantastic addition to the calendar, really, when you think of, I suppose, the Christmas festival normally in Leopardstown, and everybody then is aiming towards Cheltenham, whereas they've sandwiched this in between in the last 2 or 3 years, I think it's running out, and it's been a huge success, really. So the fact that we get to see these brilliant horses again, I was even looking at the card for tomorrow and it looks mouth-watering, to say the least. So hopefully, I think I'm going to get over there on Sunday, so I'm looking forward to that.
Absolutely. Well, we'll keep you around. I'll be chatting to Jane Mangan a bit later on, so I might get you your thoughts on the weekend as well. But listen, what we've had about 3 minutes of positivity, so let's bring it down a bit now and start with the disappointing news, Alan, that Stephen Kenny has lost assistant manager Anthony Barry for the upcoming friendly against Belgium, and they've lost them to Belgium. So it's a disappointing start to 2022 for the Republic of Ireland manager.
Yeah, especially coming off the back of probably huge positivity for Stephen Kenny, really, towards the end of obviously the campaign and the way things finished, and people were obviously very optimistic about the season upcoming and the games and the Nations League and obviously qualifiers. So it is disappointing. I think that's the general consensus out there. Obviously this coach is highly, highly regarded. We all know when he came in, obviously he was part of Chelsea's backroom team. I think the biggest compliment you can pay him is the fact that when Frank Lampard left, Tuchel obviously kept him on as well. He was the only member of staff from Lampard's backroom team that he kept on. And for us to get him, especially when we lost Damien Duff, because we all know how highly regarded Damien is, and everybody's seen that as a major blow. But the fact that there hasn't been much mentioned about Duff's absence since Anthony Barry has come in, I think speaks volumes for the quality that this coach is. So I know a couple of lads involved, obviously on the backroom team as well and stuff, and from any conversation I've had with them in terms of the impact that he's had, has been hugely positive. It really has. And obviously we've heard Stephen in press conferences speaking glowingly about him as well. But I think the impact that he's had on the team in terms of the change of formation, because you know yourself, Shane, we all associate Stephen Kenny with a 4-3-3 formation that he was hugely successful with, obviously at Dundalk, and he would have always been a 4-3-3 man. But the fact that Chelsea were playing the 3-4-3 and Barry came in and obviously changed personnel, and I think we had the personnel to try that out, when obviously the debate that was always kind of around Seamus Coleman and Matt Doherty, and can we fit them in, and have adjusted to that and been able to fit them in and seamlessly, really. And I think that's, you look at, I suppose, the template going forward for the way we played in the last few games. That was what I think Stephen was building up to, and he's had a huge impact on that, Anthony Barry. Also the fact that the set pieces as well, I think he specialises in also. So it's a huge blow for Stephen. It's disappointing, as you say. I just wonder around the whole, I posed the question today, Shane, on Twitter, just in terms of Stephen's contract talks have been dragging out for quite some time now. We did hear just after Christmas, and or just prior to Christmas, that things were agreed and they were going to offer him a contract. I'm not too pleased the fact that it has dragged on. Like, if we're going to commit to this manager and back the manager, and I think that's the general feeling amongst the fans, that they want to see the obviously the FAI to commit to Stephen and offer him that contract and build something towards obviously the introduction of all these new young players. The fact that it's just dragged on, and I just posed the question today, that had the commitment been made to Stephen and a contract signed to not only Stephen but to his backroom team as well, and had we nailed the likes of Stephen and Anthony Barry down to maybe a 2 or 3 year contract, would things have been different? Obviously Belgium is a huge pull, and the fact that he's going there and the chance with an opportunity to win a World Cup, never mind just qualify for a tournament, so we're poles apart in that regard. But I just wonder if it was the fact that he was under contract here, would it have been slightly different maybe to get him? And I think he should have been nailed down.
And to add to that, Stephen Kenny has had to deal with Damien Duff stepping away, as you mentioned there, and we impartially wish him the best of luck with Shelburne this year, and also Rory Higgins. And there's also the fact that Robbie Keane is still on the books of the FAI. So do you think he might come in as part of the setup now, or has that ship sailed and Stephen will want to get his own men in and be already scouting? And who knows, he might already have someone in mind.
Yeah, because I think from what I gather, this has been coming for the last couple of weeks, so I think Stephen and his staff are aware of this, but it's still a huge blow. But to try and fill the boots of Anthony Barry, first of all trying to fill him with Damien Duff, and then as I say, you get a coach the calibre of Barry coming in, was fantastic. So the fact that we haven't really mentioned much of Damien's absence, as I say, has been a huge kind of positive towards how good Anthony Barry has. Can you replace now Anthony Barry? That's difficult, Shane, you know. Obviously, is Keith Andrews there, and he has a very good relationship with Keith, and Keith, I think, played an influential role in the fact of getting Anthony Barry in. Whether you're going to get somebody as good as that, I'm not so sure. I'm sure Stephen will be looking around, but I'm sure if you were to speak to Stephen right now, it's a huge blow, and one that he was so optimistic about the season coming and the games upcoming and the fact that we finished the campaign strongly before Christmas. He was, as I say, so looking forward to this. So it'll be a huge blow, and one he could do without, because as I say, and I know people will suggest, look, it's more about the manager and stuff, never underestimate the impact that an assistant manager or a coach can have on a team. And you look at around all the great managers, they always have a good sidekick alongside them, and obviously Barry, as I say, was hugely influential in a lot of what he did. So it's a major blow. Who's out there, who he's going to bring in, I don't know, Shane. It's obviously, the news only broke today, so we'll have to wait and see who he looks to replace Anthony Barry. But it's a huge blow. It's a huge, huge blow.
Yeah, you mentioned he was so liked by the players. And Ryan O'Dwyer, if I bring you into the conversation, because there's a bit of crossover regards to what sport it is, but Alan mentioned there in terms of having a good management team, and you've obviously played on inter-county levels and have very successful club teams as well. So yes, you can have the right man in charge, you can have the leader, you can have the man that can be tactically astute and can give the big roaring message in the dressing room. But how important is it to unify the players, to have a really good backroom team and have lads that you'd get on with and can really communicate on a level that perhaps you couldn't with the man in charge?
Yeah, look, no matter what the sport, whether it is rugby, soccer, Gaelic football, hurling, it doesn't matter. You're not going to have one person that knows it all. So it's about the people that surround them, that are surrounding the manager, and they each have a role in place, and certainly you see there with Anthony Barry, he contributed so much, and before that Damien Duff. You, and I suppose I'm going back to the contract talks that you were talking about. If a contract, what, like, first of all, you have to ask the question, why did it drag on for so long? But also that if it was sealed and signed before Christmas or when it all this started off, would he be moving now? Would he be getting out of the Ireland setup into the Belgium setup, which is a great opportunity as well? But look, going back to what you originally said about surrounding yourself with people that, I suppose every one of them have a role, and it's so important because you might be able to connect well with one player but not another player, but that's where the other people come in your setup, that they're able to contribute in different ways and communicate in different ways with the people, because you're going to have 25, 30 people in the dressing room, all egos, and especially I suppose the higher up level you go, more egos, and we've seen that whether it is a club team or an intercounty team or an international team, you're going to have egos there, and I think the right men in place or right women in place as well is so important to deal with that.
I think the departures before, to be fair, Shane, as we mentioned, Damien Duff and Alan Kelly around the different kind of, not to go over old ground, but there was more controversy around those departures that we remember going back. There's not controversy around this. This is more of a fact that, as I say, the fact it's just a huge blow because of the quality of coach that he is. The only little thing, as I say, and obviously Ryan alluded to it and I mentioned it, it is the contract thing. It's dragging on a little bit now, you know. You're either committing to this manager or you're not. And they've had enough time to realise that and realise what he's about, Stephen. And I think from Stephen's point of view as well, like we all knew about in his initial start to obviously his reign and COVID and the injuries and all these different kind of, I'm not saying excuses, but there were factors in why we weren't might have been picking up results. For the first time when we went away last year during that summer camp when they played Andorra and we had a couple of friendlies against Hungary as well, from then on it's been very settled, the camp, and that's so important as well, Shane, in terms of building a bit of continuity amongst the group, consistency going forward as well, getting familiar with faces around them, there's relationships building, there's a bit of a bond, and again it's just something that out of nowhere, out of Stephen's control maybe, that here's another bit of a blow that he has to contend with, and he has to try and fill the gap and fill the void and maybe start all over again in terms of relationships being built with players where they all felt comfortable with Anthony Barry. And I aim that at the powers that be, because they could have nailed this down, as I said, if the contracts were signed. I'm not suggesting the pull of Belgium would have been too big, but if he was nailed down to a 2-year contract or whatever they were offering Stephen, and Barry and Keith Andrews and all his backroom team were being signed up to that agreement as well, which they would have been supporting Stephen with, it would have been a much harder pull for Belgium to get him, or Roberto Martinez, where they're obviously looking at him at the moment, and the word around football circles is everybody knows him, his involvement with Chelsea is, oh, he's available, his contract is up in 2 or 3 months or whatever, and he can walk out for free and we can go and take him. And it was, and I know it's Belgium, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying we can compete with that in terms of the quality of players, but if he was under contract, I just think it might have been a slightly harder sell for Belgium than what they've got.
Yeah, I think that is a completely valid point. Well, I'd say about 3 minutes of negativity, about 10 minutes of somewhat positivity and negativity. It's a bit of a balance.
Constructive criticism,
I suppose. You could definitely
call
it.
But they're valid questions.
It's fair and balanced, but, you know, Belgium are the number one team ranked in the world, so you can obviously see the kind of pull factors there that you did mention. Turning to rugby and more managerial movements, positive news as well, which is great to see. The IRFU announced the appointment of Niamh Briggs as Ireland women's assistant coach ahead of the Women's Six Nations. Former Ireland captain Briggs will join Greg McWilliams' coaching team as preparations for the 2022 championship begin this weekend. And also, there is rugby on this evening on RT2, the under-20s, the men's side, Ireland face Wales down in Cork. They're back in Cork, I think, for the first time in 2 years. And sticking with the rugby narrative, Simon Easterby, Ireland defence coach, was up in front of the media. He was chatting to Michael Corcoran a bit earlier. And I want to play this clip, Ryan, because you're going to the match and we're talking about fans being back at grounds as well. And that's exactly what Simon Easterby was speaking about, just having the fans back.
Some of these players have played 14, 15 times, but never played in front of a full house in a Six Nations game. I think the last time we had a full house for a Six Nations game was against Wales a couple of years ago. So, yeah, it's going to be huge. There's one thing playing for your country, but when there's a crowd engaged and connected to you, when you've got your family in the stands watching, whether you've got, whether it's your first cap or your 50th cap, it's so special. And I don't think, you know, I think what the last couple of years has taught us is that, you know, players really haven't, they're not taking that for granted anymore. You know, it is so special, and the connections that we can have with each other on the pitch, how that can connect with the crowd and those guys back home, you know, it makes a massive difference to the way that they approach the game.
Yeah, it's good to hear from Simon Easterby there. Ireland Wales tomorrow. Ryan, I'm a bit jealous that I'm stuck in work and you'll be able to enjoy a couple of pints with your wife.
I appreciate it.
Listen, we will be turning our attention to hurling after the break. So, Alan, I think you can go off and get a cup of tea. I don't think hurling be your seed. So.
I'm a fan, Shane. Yeah, I can throw me cup of tea.
<in. laughs> Well, Ryan, you'll be staying with me, and we'll have Shane McGrath as well joining us to preview the Allianz Hurling Leagues right after this.
With Green Farm, rise and grind and the hustle mindset aren't real. The protein in our chicken and turkey is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on.
Hurling.
Yes, you're very welcome back to Game On as we turn our attention now to hurling. Ryan O'Dwyer is in studio with us, and I'm delighted to say Shane McGrath joins us on the line as well. Shane, if I come to you first with the news of the day, I suppose some unfortunate news as well. The retirement of Clare's Colm Galvin, only 29, a member of that class of 2013, and he's had to retire due to the persistent groin injury. A cruel blow both for Colm and indeed for Clare, Shane.
Yeah, it is, Shane. Yeah, I suppose 29, and I suppose we had Paddy during the week. You know, we had Harry Kehoe there recently as well at Wexford. But I suppose for Colm and for Paddy in particular, and I'm sure the lads in the studio will agree, it's one thing walking away from sport, your own decision, but when it's taken away from you because of injury and you have to walk away, especially like Colm Galvin, Paddy Maher. So these guys, so ultra professional guys, played at the top of their game, both have All-Ireland medals, you know, All-Stars, so very difficult. And I suppose the thing from Clare's point of view is, I think there's only five lads remaining now from that 2013 team. You've John Conlon, Tony Kelly, David Mack, Patrick O'Connor and Shane O'Donnell. So, you know, they're a new team now, but you don't have many guys with experience of winning All-Irelands left. So, look, I suppose it's 9-10 seasons ago now, all the same. But, yeah, look, It's hard going. It just shows you the wear and tear, Shane, on the body of inter-county, like, you know. And some guys are lucky. I touch wood, I was lucky myself to avoid it. But for some guys, it's just hard to shake off. And I suppose we have to realise, lads, that we all these guys want to be able to, you know, get up off a couch. I was reading what Paddy's interview during the week, you know, and after they're finished sport. So look, it's a hard decision to make, but I suppose we have to think of life outside of sport as well, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose, Ryan, if we're to continue that discussion on the wear and tear as well, obviously Paddy Maher stepping away and Tipper going to have to rebuild, but this league campaign is potentially 7 matches in 9 weeks. Then you have a 2-week break until the championship starts. So it's coming thick and fast. It's going to be quite a difficult balancing act, particularly for some of the new managers as well, in terms of how they approach this. And I know, I appreciate it's a perennial question. Do you want to hit the ground running? Do you want to try out new players? You have to find that proper and right balance. But this year of all years is going to be extremely difficult.
Yeah, and hopefully there won't be any interruptions this year with more COVID lockdowns like there has been the last two seasons. But yeah, I suppose because there's such a quick turnaround between league and championship, yeah, obviously you want to win a league, you want to do well in the league. But I think overall, it's championship is what everyone remembers. And that's where people want to play on the hard ground, in the sun and the crowds or whatever. That's when you want to make a mark. So I think I like the way the new structure is. Well, saying new structure, it was planned for the last 2 years, but only really this year it's kicking on. But I do like the way it is, because the league is going to be used for what the league should be used for, and that's about building your team and getting the right 15 on the pitch when championship starts. And I'd say Shane will probably agree with me with that. You want the best team, and look, you will have starters for the league, you'll have lads that you know are going to start, but it's about blending the new with the more established and finding your best lineup that way.
Yeah, and that balance with new managers coming on board, and I think Clare have to deal with the added headache as well. I don't think Aidan McCarthy's available for the year as well, so it's another blow to Clare. But I suppose we've a very Tipperary-centric feel to our guests today. And Shane, if I go down to yourself, with Tipperary, Colm Bonner, will want to get off to a good start. We won't mention that defeat to Kerry in the pre-season competition, shall we say. But he does have a bit of a rebuilding mission going on there. Obviously, we mentioned Paddy Maher not being available, Brendan Maher not being available as well now, both gone from the panel. So where are Tipperary, and do they have the right balance, or will Colm be trying to find that right balance in blooding new players through and trying to bring in a few experienced heads as well, the likes of Dennis Maher, I suppose, coming in. Ryan, you mentioned him earlier as well, I think 30 years of age, starting at 14 now. So Shane, where are Tip in terms of that balance?
Well, should I tell you though, Shane, about the Kerry thing, you know, tis, you might think it's a bit of a laugh, you know, and we, I suppose, I was only playing golf with Kyle Barr recently and I was kind of slagging him about it as well. But I tell you, that really did hurt the group. You know, and I'd say they had a really good look inside, you know, like what are they about? And I think that was, it might be a blessing in disguise for them, you know. First ever Tip team to lose to Kerry in a game of hurling. But look, Kerry are making great strides down there as well. But yeah, look, you mentioned a few names there. Obviously, I mean, there's no point in trying to say you're going to replace Paddy Maher. You'll never replace Paddy Maher because he's one of the greatest, if not the greatest defender maybe Tip have ever had. So there's no point in trying to do that. But, you know, to be fair to Colm Bonner, what he's tried to do is he is trying to give, you know, lads who maybe haven't got a go the last few years, he's going to give them a go. Dennis Maher is getting rewarded for a great club season, no more so than Conor Lehan is down in Cork. See him starting at the weekend. You know, Mark Kehoe is starting there full forward. You know, he was really lifting last year for Tip, was very lucky not to make the team. And, you know, you've new guys like James Quigley, who's been involved in the panel there the last few years. You know, Cathal Barrett is starting cornerback, so that's good experience. Seamus Kendi in the half-back line, you know. So, you know, Mikey Breen, Alan Flynn midfield. So, look, there's still a lot of the, you know, well-known names there. But I suppose what are Tip looking for this year? They are looking to hit the ground running, Shane. And I tell you, like, Tip is very proud Hurling County, and with all due respect to the Kerry and Laois and everyone, like, if Colm Bonner's first two games lost to Kerry and a loss to Laois, he's under massive pressure for round two playing Kilkenny in Semple Stadium. So of course they're going to massively want to win this game, and I think they'll be really, really hungry for it. And they'll be, you know, they know that they, like, if they don't get a victory, there's going to be massive pressure on the group from outside, maybe not internally, but outside. And, you know, like, we're all human, and when you're in a county like Tipperary where they're, you know, expected to win these games and you don't, that can have a negative effect. So look, they're really going to want to hit the ground running there tomorrow night in Port Laois. But look, it'll be a tough one for them, you know, with Laois are, they're going well, and Clockballacolla lads did a great run in the club championship, and the confidence they got off that would feed through to the rest of the group too. So yeah, the Tip really do need to win this game tomorrow night. Like,
yeah, Laois Tipperary in Port Laois, I think it's 6 o'clock throw-in down in O'More Park. And you mentioned kind of how organised Laois were, and Cheddar's kind of had his backroom team in place, and the Clockballacolla lads only, I think, had a week off, Ryan. So
yeah,
they're going to be no mugs going into this.
Yeah, and I'll tell you one thing I'd like to see now is the influence that Gavin O'Mahony's going to have. He captained Limerick for a couple of years. He's after coming into the Laois setup now. And also Fran Ford, he was with Galway in 2017. He was with Laois last year. So I suppose he last year with COVID and everything was rushed. So it's nice to get a pre-season this year. I'm interested to see what influence they have. And also I like the Tip team, the way it's laid out. There's a mix of more established players like Cathal Barrett that we've already said, Dan McCormick, Jason Ford, Michael Breen. But then you have James Quigley, you have Craig Morgan, but you also have Jared Brown back. He hasn't been involved the last 2 years, but he's going to have a big year for them. And lads that haven't been getting a run on their previous setups, you have Mark Keogh and lads like that, and Dylan Quirk as well. But from the Tip Laois game, the thing I'm actually looking forward to most tomorrow is to see there's two Laois players in particular. Liam O'Connell, I think he's playing centre back for Laois, nicknamed Fonzie. He actually hasn't hurled, I think this is his first competitive game in four years. Just when he was coming out of under 21, he broke his ankle, and that set him back. I think he went a bit unconditioned. That's the nicest way of saying it. But
that's the political terminology.
Yeah, but he went back playing junior with his club, and I suppose looking at it, you might have said, oh, look, he's gone, he's has been or whatever, but he's after after coming back now, he's flying fit again, so it'll be interesting to see what he does. And then also Ben Conroy, he'll be playing the forward, probably the half forward line. He's been in Dubai for the last 2 years, and I suppose before he went out to Dubai, he was one of Laois's best hurlers. So I'm looking forward to seeing both of them. But like, look, Laois are going to be up against it with Tip. Tip want to prove a point, and like Shane said, don't want to be bet by Kerry and then Laois. But Laois do have a few players missing. You have Chad O'Wire missing, PJ Scully and Liam Delaney are missing through injury. So look, Tip are favourites, and rightfully so. But hopefully it'll be a good game for Tip anyway.
You mentioned, is it named Fonzie? Do you know where that comes from? I'm obsessed with GAA.
I haven't a clue. I just heard there that his nickname is Fonzie.
Well, listen, any Laois listeners, 51552, get your text in. Ryan, I want to stick with you, Ed. We're talking about kind of the players and so many managers wanting to try out so many different players. And Galway face awfully in the Ballyhale derby, I suppose, Shefflin against Fenley. And I think it was reported that Shefflin's tried up to just under 50 players for Galway, and who he's trying to find. Like, because he's going in there and he's, let's call a spade, he's somewhat an outsider going into a new county, and he'll want to do well there, and he's trying to find the right blend of players.
Yeah, look, if he took over Kilkenny, He'd have an idea of nearly all the players anyway, with the club set up and everything. He's going into Galway. There's so many hurling clubs in Galway. Lads that just mightn't have put their head up above the parapet the last couple of years. And Shefflin doesn't want to leave any stone unturned. And I think he's taken a leaf out of Cody's book here. And I suppose throughout the league as well, I reckon he's going to take a leaf out of Cody's book by trying players and getting it right for the championship. I think every single year, since what 1820, when Brian Cody took over Kilkenny at this stage,
I think he was there for the foundation of the GAA. I think he
was in Hazes. He's one of the signatures. But Shefflin will want to try players to get it, like we spoke about earlier, to get your best 15 on the team. And he's named Dahi Burke as captain, and I think Cooney as vice captain for the year. They're two stalwarts of the team that are going to play big parts, and it's about getting them together with the lads that may come into it. And look, you look at the success that the minors and under 20s have had the last couple of years in Galway. They're only going to add to it, and it's about, I suppose, the transition from getting them to the underage structure into the senior. And I think Shefflin is a good man to do that.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, we have to mention No Joe Canning as well, if we're talking about missing big players as well. And also, on a sincere note, our condolences do go out to the whole Canning family. Yeah. Obviously, the sad passing of Josephine Canning. Shane, I know they're Galway's opponents, Offaly, with Fenley's going well down there, but Offaly, I think, will just be happy to be back hurling at the top table.
Yeah, they will, Shane, and I know it's quote or a statement often made with all due respect, you know, and this, that and the other. But look, like most hurling people will know, right? In Division 1A, there's Limerick, Wexford, Galway, Cork, Offaly and Clare. Every one of those other five counties apart from Offaly are targeting the Offaly game as a win. So it's a massive incentive for Offaly. Every day they go out, they will be underdogs. You know, there should be one performance in them in the five league games, you know. I mean, to go away to Galway for your first game under a new manager who's looking to make a statement, you know, try out a lot of new guys, and it's a very, very tough ask for them the first day out. But like what's success for Offaly this year for me? Success for Offaly for me this year is try and stay in Division 1, like Division 1A, and just try and stay in Division 1 hurling from the league point of view. Championship-wise, you know, it'll be different, obviously, but I mean, For massive success for them will be to stay there, because I mean Limerick, Wexford, Galway, Cork, Clare, every day they go out to hurl, that's going to be a very, very difficult fixture, and there's going to be no different this weekend. So all them other teams are going to target Offaly no more so than in Division 1B. The other four teams, Tip, Waterford, Dublin and Kilkenny, are going to target Laois and Antrim games and look at them as saying, look, these are games we should be winning. So like that for me would be massive, massive success for Michael Fenley this year. To start off the year is try and stay in Division 1A hurling. What game they'll target, Shane, I don't know. Like, you know, when they have everyone back maybe 2-3 games in, and Mike Findlay, you know, knows who his best 15 are, maybe they'll target one game, especially a game at home as well. You know, and look, maybe Clare in round 3, they're at home to Clare in round 3, that could be a game that they might target. But they'll need to get one big victory, and you know, that'll spur them on then for later in the year. Like,
Yeah, and indeed the likes of Antrim will hoping to be kind of remaining in division as well. Gents, if I could, I'd be chatting hurling all night. But we do have to wrap it up very shortly. But before we do, obviously there's obvious narratives. Limerick simmering nicely, seemingly unstoppable. Cork have a few young guys coming through, and a lot of players are playing Fitzgibbon Cup as well, which I suppose is a debate for another day. But it's great to see a great competition. But before we do wrap it up, Ryan, Waterford, Liam Cahill, he'll want the trophy.
Yeah, he's had success since he's gone in there. When you look at it, when he took him over, they hadn't won a game in 2 years. He took him over, then the next year they got to an All-Ireland final. Last year, a few injuries. You see Tadhg Na Bhfirce hadn't played last year after having an unbelievable year the year before, and he just recovering from his knee. He'll want to get silverware, but I think... Yeah, to be great for him to win the league, but I do think he's going to have championship in as his main focus, rightfully so. But I think he would sacrifice not a poor league, but sacrifice an average league if he could win Munster. And look, any of the teams in Munster could win. Any of the five teams could be walking up the steps to win it. I know Limerick are obviously going to be the favourites, but any of the five could win it.
Yeah, and just in case any listeners think I'm brushing over the Limerick side of things, we'll have Niall Moran in on the show with Marie and Ruby on Monday. Shane, just very, very briefly, Wexford, Dara Egan on board there, might implement the new sweeper system, will want to play expansive hurling as well. How do you see that appointment going? Wexford, possible dark horses for doing a bit this year?
Oh yeah, look, I suppose I'm starting to feel my age now, Shane. Two lads that would be around my age or I would have hurled with Stephen Malumphy's manager, Kerry, and Dara Egan's manager of Wexford now, so we're all pushing on, none of us getting any younger. But look, Dara would really hurt about how they performed in the Walsh Cup final. They got, like, there's no way sugarcoating it, they got hammered by Dublin. They just didn't perform at all. So look, there's a massive test from there in Wexford Park at the weekend against Limerick. Limerick are starting with, I think, nine from their starting winning All-Ireland team. Likes of Colin Coughlin, Cahill O'Neill, these are serious talents. There's a guy called Adam English, watch out for this guy, he's going to be a serious hurler as well. A lot of people know about him, but maybe the casual hurling fans won't. But look, Dara's really enjoying it down there so far. A very good friend of mine, Ryan, will know him well as well. He's very professional, he's got a really good backroom team, and look, if he can get a good performance, maybe not a victory, but a really good performance against by far the best hurling team in the country at the weekend, I think that'll be a great start to the league for Dara and for Wexford, Shane.
For sure. Well, hurling is back this weekend. The Allianz Hurling Leagues is 30 years of Allianz sponsorship with the leagues, and it's going from strength to strength. Ryan O'Dwyer, Shane McGrath, thank you very much. Coming up in a few moments, we will have racing with Jane Mangan. Don't go away.
FM. Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on. Racing.
Yes, you're very welcome back to Game On, and it is Friday, so that means I'm delighted to say Jane Mangan is on the line to look forward to a big weekend of racing, Jane. It's the Dublin Racing Festival that we have on the cards, and personally, I cannot wait for this one. Unfortunately, I won't get to go. I'm sure you'll be there. So it is 2 days, it's 15 races, it's 1.8 million in prize money. So is it any wonder these races are going to be so competitive over the next couple of days?
Yeah, it's going to be really tough to find winners. And Shane, you last time I was in the studio, you promised me that to get me to a League of Ireland match. Well, I will promise to get you to Leopardstown. I'm actually here overlooking the track at the moment. It looks like it usually does in peak condition, as you would expect for the biggest weekend in National Hunt Racing. As you say, 8 grade ones, 1.8 million in prize money. And we have each day, I think there's something for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that promise still does stand. Now, League of Ireland doesn't start until February 18th, so if you want to talk to my bosses to get a weekend off, I'm all ears, Jane. But listen, getting down to the business of it, tomorrow then, day one of the festival, and the Paul Nicholls-trained Frodon, Willie Mullins' hero of 12 months ago, Ken Boy, and Henry de Bromhead's Cheltenham Gold Cup winner, Manella Indo, head of field of 8 for the feature race of the day, the Grade 1 Irish Gold Cup. So, I've already mentioned a few names there. I suppose, where do we start? Because there's so many big names among the 8 runners.
Yeah, I think it's fair to start with the defending champion. The Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup went to Ken Boy last year. He fought off Manila Indo and more. And I think he really likes Leopardstown. Willie Mullins is expected to have a very big weekend and Paul Townend with him. But Ken Boy, aside from the top two in the betting, Frodon and Manila Indo, he's the most consistent here. Manila Indo has a lot of questions to answer. Yes, he's last year's Cheltenham Gold Cup heroine, but he really disappointed in the King George last time. And lest we forget, go back to October in Down Royal, where he was beaten on his seasonal debut by Frodon. Frodon and Bryony Frost, Paul Nicholls, they're coming into the Lions' den somewhat, a brave move. But is it any wonder, as you say, €140,000 of prize money on offer here? Of course he's going to come. He's one of two runners for Nicholls over the weekend. And Frodon and Bryony Frost, they're going to put it up to the Irish here.
They absolutely will. As you say, it's big money. It's going to be big entertainment. So sticking with Saturday, Quilixios won the spring juvenile hurdle in this card last year before winning the Triumph at Cheltenham. So is there any particular horse in this year's race that could repeat that feat?
I definitely think there's a few candidates who could put themselves in that category. Fieldor was Antipo's favourite for the Triumph before his stable companion Pied Piper eclipsed a field on Cheltenham's trial day last month. But Fieldor has the best form in this race. Vauban was beaten by Pied Piper in a maiden hurdle at Punchestown. There was very little between the pair on that occasion. And as a result, Vauban, despite being a maiden over hurdles, has actually gone to the top of the market for this juvenile hurdle at 135 tomorrow. I think Fieldor is probably the most consistent in what we've seen so far, but Vauban is completely unexposed. Throw in unexposed types like Vidali, the tight turns, and Ben Siegel. This is a proper grade one. I think we proved at Cheltenham last month that we have the best juveniles. Let's just see if we have more than one.
Yeah, it's going to be so competitive yet again. Listen, we've seen over the past number of years, the Irish Arkle, it's all about speed. We've got six runners here now. Who's going to come out on top?
Yeah, the Ward Solicitors Irish Arkle, we've seen brilliant winners of this in the past. And we've only six runners, but there are legitimate chances for each one. The market suggests Blue Lord is the horse. We heard that Fernie Hollow is missing the rest of the season for Team Willie Mullins, and Blue Lord immediately went to the top of the market after his display at Nace. I think Autumn Calore and St. Sam, they've done nothing wrong over fences so far. Both won their beginner's chases in great style. But Riviere d'Etel, for me, is somewhat of an underestimated mare. She's raced 150. She was just behind Fernie Hollow here at Christmas, and she's getting that all-important £7 allowance. Throw in the fact that Blue Lord has a little bit of a penalty to carry, so he has to concede £9 to her. I think it's going to be a big task, so I'm going with the mare there, Riviere d'Etel.
Okay, well listen, sticking on the subject of speed, because we mentioned the Irish Arkle is all about speed, and I saw a really nice interview with Lorcan Ware, the clerk of the course, was speaking to RT Sport Online this week, and it's expected we'll get going on yielding ground at Leopardstown with the possibility of rain before day two on Sunday, and there's been so much talk in the lead up to the meeting regarding just the going at the track, with concerns expressed, I suppose, about conditions, and some regarding them as quicker than ideal. Now, Lorcan did assure us all the ground will have some give, but should we be worried at all that that could be a slight negative to what is sure to be a great weekend?
I don't think so. We've learned from our mistakes in the past. I think Leopardstown learned from the mistakes in the past, but when you want to get these best in the business in regards to National Hunt Sphere anyway to line up, you need to have safe ground, because of course they're heavy animals, they're landing off fences and hurdles, and you want everything to be safe for both horse and rider. So I'm actually here at the track. It was raining when I arrived, and I think throughout the month of January they have put down around or over 200 mils of artificial watering. Throw in a small bit of rain, a smattering of rain. Imagine an Irish person complaining that we had a dry January. That never really happens, does it? So look, it's been an unusual month of January and into February, but I think conditions are going to be perfect, because they have to be if you expect these horses to line up with a view to many of them taking their chance in Cheltenham next month.
Sure, it is a very Irish thing, I suppose, to be giving out about the weather. We've devoted enough time to it earlier on in the show in the hurling chat with Shane and Ryan talking about conditions for the National Hurling League, so why not continue that now with the horse racing? But moving on then to day two, Sunday, four rivals stand between Honeysuckle and a third straight success in the Grade 1 Irish Champion Hurdle on day two of the festival. So it's probably fair to say that it would be a huge shock if Honeysuckle's winning streak was to come to an end.
Yeah, it would, and I appreciate this isn't really a race for any punters, but it is for anybody who admires horses, anybody who admires a brilliant athlete, and that is exactly what Honeysuckle is. She's 13 from 13, still unbeaten in her career. If she wins this race, I think she'll set a record. So for the most unbeaten run of a National Hunt horse. I think Bula had the record of 13. She levelled that in the Hatton's Grace, and she may well break it on Sunday. But the Chanel Farm Irish Champion Hurdle is a coveted race. San Hua, Zanahir, Heaven Help Us, Echoes and Rain are all talented. They're talented in their own right, but realistically, the mare's in a league of her own.
And Jane, I know we're only at the start of February, but the novice hurdle division is taking shape nicely, and we'll learn so much about those youngsters this weekend with a view then to March.
Yes, we'll have the Nathaniel Lacey's, the opening race actually on the weekend. You'll have the staying hurdlers, like the Apollo Games, Manila Crooner, Eric Bloodaxe. They're the first race we kick off with, and one of the third last race on Sunday is the South Sussex Ireland Novice Hurdle. That's for the 2 milers, and that'll help shape the Supreme market. You've got My Maid Mozzie in there for Gavin Cromwell, Sir Gerhard for Willie Mullins, he's anti-post favourite for the Ballymore, Three Stripe Life for Gordon Elliott, quite an underrated horse so far, and Statuaire, the Royal Bond winner, she's a mare that surprised many at Fairy House, but this is a 9-runner race. Every one of them has a chance, and I think these horses could be the best in the business going forward.
Well, you've teed up this weekend absolutely perfectly, but before I do let you go, the most important question, I think, out of them all, even for the casual listener and for the horse racing anoraks, and I'm sure our listeners will be shouting at the wireless to ask me for me to get you to answer this one. The best bet of the weekend, where's the value, Jane?
There will be value in the handicaps this weekend, perhaps not in the grade ones, but I am a big fan of Riviere de Tell. I've already explained my reasons for that. So in the Irish Arkle tomorrow, I'm going for the mayor to beat the boys in the 2:10 Riviere de Tell. And I hope everybody, if you can get to Leopardstown, if you're watching all sport this weekend, that we can entertain you somewhat on RTE1 this weekend.
Absolutely. Good plug there as well. Yeah, it's going to be a fantastic weekend. So do tune in to RT1, as Jane said. And listen, Jane, I'll let you go. Enjoy your Friday evening and have a great time over the weekend as well. I'm sure we'll catch up next week. And hopefully that good value bet comes through.
Absolutely. Well, the main thing is that we all enjoy our weekend of sport. Isn't it great to be back?
Oh, absolutely. Couldn't say better. Jane, mind yourself. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Game on. Racing.
Well, no pressure now, Alan Colley, but you're following the great Jane Mangan there, and I'm going to pose a horse racing question to you. Do you know what? I'll be kind to you this evening, considering it's Friday and we're looking forward to the weekend. I'll keep it generic. What are you most looking forward to now about the Dublin Horse Racing Festival?
I think it's hard to be more enthusiastic than Jane, but I'll give it my best shot, Shane. And as I'd echo every word that she says in terms of this festival, because since they've added onto the calendar, it's become such a roaring success. And the one industry where we actually can claim to be world class, and we are absolutely world class, is horse racing. And these horses are the cream of the crop, Shane. Like, as I said, you go from Christmas normally in previous years, you would go from the Christmas festival waiting to maybe Cheltenham, because they'd all be gearing towards Cheltenham, and you have to wait that 3 months. Whereas now you have them sandwiched in between as well around February, and you get to see them. So if there is anyone out there that has any interest, really, even a passing interest in horse racing, to go and see these horses, I would highly recommend it, because it's a brilliant festival, brilliant weekend, and as I say, to see the cream of the crop, it doesn't get much better than that.
Absolutely. Live sport, live fans, back at venues. It is great. And we'll be back in 3 minutes' time, as we'll be previewing all the weekend's FA Cup action. Alan Colley live in studio, and Fergal Brennan will be joining us.
Game on 2FM.
With Green Farm, being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on. Football.
Yes, you're very welcome back to Game On this Friday evening. It is great to have your company wherever in the world you are tuning in from. And I'm delighted to still be in the company of Alan Colley live in studio. And we have Fergal Brennan joining us on the line now as we turn our attention to the FA Cup that is on this weekend and the FA Cup that is on this evening. Alan, Manchester United versus Middlesbrough. I'm frantically trying to update Twitter here to see if there's any United team news in, but I can't see anything yet. But Ralph Rangnick during the week said that Paul Pogba might return. It'll be interesting to see how he fits in to his plans, if he does, because it's a case of, obviously, do you want to bother an interim manager and a player that wants out, and how he will add to Man United. And also on the flip side, from a Middlesbrough point of view, I am loving Chris Wilder's quote, Alan, that he said earlier that he doesn't want any of his players swapping shirts with Cristiano Ronaldo, that they're not there in a sightseeing mission, they're there to play a game of ball, which is proper old school FA Cup stuff.
I absolutely love it, Shane, as well. And I miss Chris Wilder, because when you think when he was the Sheffield United manager and that first season when they did so well, how refreshing he was in his post-match interviews always, and even his press conferences prior to games as well. So obviously things didn't pan out then the second season, but he's come in to Middlesbrough and they were really struggling, but since he's come in the last 10 games they've won 8 and have drawn 1, have only lost 1, and that was the Blackburn, who were riding high themselves. So unbelievable run of form, and this will be a tricky game for Man United. I actually think Chris Wilder will go there with the intention of obviously trying to get the victory. I know a lot of teams in the Championship and devise on maybe promotion, and they make changes. They're hovering 7th at the moment, just outside the playoffs. As I say, a brilliant run of form, but I think they'll go and enjoy the game and take the game to Man United. And when you think of Man United, I suppose over the last number of weeks and months and since Ragnick has come in, the last game they played before the little winter break, it was probably the best I've seen them, in the sense that they played a good West Ham team, and it was the most competitive I've seen them in a game in a long, long time, against one of maybe against a better side. As I say, up to now since Ragnick has come in, they have picked up results, but they've played nobody of any note. That was the first game, and the fact that they won so late on as well, Shane, you think of that injury time winner, psychologically that'll give them a huge boost. Obviously there was the break and there's other issues, as we know, so it'll be interesting to see how they approach the game and whether he'll go with a strong team. But I think it'll be a tough game against Middlesbrough tonight.
Yeah, it certainly will be, and there's plenty of tough games tomorrow as well. I love the FA Cup weekend, I have to say. I'm a bit of a traditionalist in that regard, you may have noticed, considering we refer to soccer as association football, but however. Fergal, one of the big matches and one of the big narratives tomorrow is Everton versus Brentford. Frank Lampard, of course, arriving with a point to prove at Goodison. And he'll need a bit of organisation, I suspect, because there's been a narrative around Everton with the changing of management as well, about needing some solidity. We've seen centre-back Michael Keane suffered all season, I suppose, isn't an overly harsh statement. He was left out by Duncan Ferguson for the loss to Villa. Yerry Mina, Mason Holgate, Ben Godfrey are other options at the back. And I suppose one of the criticisms that was put to Lampard during his time in Chelsea was he was a bit disorganised. So he'll have a big task on his hands now here at Everton, Fergal.
Yeah, indeed. And despite the fact that it's an FA Cup game that he kicks off with this weekend, it's one of two all Premier League ties up against Brentford at Goodison. And there's obviously been a lot of positivity around the transfer window. They got a couple of deals done in Van der Beek and Dele Alli coming in. But there's no easy start for him. They're short on time in the Premier League. They're in a relegation battle. They're probably going to have enough to dig themselves out of it. But as you say, this idea that getting them organised, getting them well drilled, and getting them to resemble the team that they are, which is probably a mid-table, edge of Europe Premier League team, needs to change. It needs to change quickly. He needs to implement his methods tactically, motivationally, very, very quickly, because the games are coming thick and fast, and the FA Cup is not a free hit for Everton, and certainly for their fans, because 1995, the last time they won a major trophy, is a long time ago. Every year that ticks by that they don't win it, Everton fans grow more and more irritated by that situation, and this will be difficult. Brentford obviously have started the season well, first top flight campaign for them as a Premier League team, and they've looked good. So this will be a big test for Lampard and for Everton tomorrow. He'll be hoping that the bounce and the positivity around the club will carry them, but there's no easy place in the Premier League, and this is definitely the case for him. He needs to start, and he needs to start well.
Yeah, and obviously the feel-good factor for their opponents, Brentford, is the return of Christian Eriksen. Alan, I do want to mention, and I hate when people refer to, say, Frank Lampard's Everton or Steven Gerrard's Aston Villa, but in this occasion, I will allow it, Wes Hoolihan's Cambridge United take on Luton Town, live on BBC as well, so we'll get to see Wezzo on the box.
Yeah, well, we're major fans of Wezzo, as everybody knows, Shane. And yeah, it's obviously his bit of a swan song, but he's doing absolutely brilliant since he's gone there. He's had a huge impact both in the league games. I think, to be fair to the management team at Cambridge, that manages game time very well also, considering the age that he's at now. But he's looked after himself so well in recent years, hence the fact that he's playing on so late in his career. And he'll always have the magic, and I'd love to see him turn it on in front of the BBC cameras over the weekend, Shane.
Okay, gents, unfortunately we're going to have to cut our football chat short, but for good reason, because as you know, if you've been listening during the week, we've been getting all romantic and we've been giving you the chance to win an unbelievable prize thanks to Aldi, and one of our daily Aldi voucher winners is going to win the ultimate prize. They'll be off to see Ireland take on France in the Guinness Six Nations at the Stade de France on Saturday, February 12th. Return flights, 3-night hotel stay and tickets to the big game. It's just a shame I wasn't able to enter. So firstly, I have to ask, do we have Porrick on the line? Porrick, can you hear me?
Hi, Gab. How are you?
Well, I'm very well. I'm gonna reserve asking how you are until I tell you the news that Porrick, you have just won the big prize and you're off to Paris. Woo-hoo. So how are you, sir?
I'm good. Absolutely ecstatic. Over the moon now.
I'm free that weekend as well, Porrick.
Hey, you'd have to get past the wife first, or you will.
How's the French, Porrick?
It's not too bad. I can learn a bit in the week now, so I can.
Okay. Well, there's plenty of books there going around about, you know, French for Dummies and everything else. Well, listen, Porrick, many congratulations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
No problem at all. Enjoy the weekend and enjoy the prize. A great prize as well. I'm very jealous. I'll not
That's
lie
an amazing
to.
Prize, isn't
Unbelievable
it?
Unbelievable prize. All thanks to Aldi as well. And I really wanted to enter during the week, but c'est la vie. I suppose, listen, if we find a weekend off, Alan, who knows, we might end up in France. But